Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Pretty great show when you go from Jimmy Griffin and Neil Salzig to Bernie Miklas. Bernie, great to have you back on the show, my friend.
DG, thanks for the invite. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Hey, before we get started, tell everyone about the Bernie Show podcast.
Thank you. I have my own YouTube channel, and you can go to YouTube/@TheBernieShow. And then we're putting out a podcast version of the show, just audio. And I understand as of today, that is available at Odyssey.com.
Very nice.
In other words, you know, listeners to KMOX and all the brother and sister stations can find it there. So we're trying to make it convenient. So we're excited about that.
So I'm excited to talk to you about the Cardinals. What a strange couple of seasons it's been, but especially this season where we just sucked and then we were just on fire and now it's starting to feel kind of stale again. Let's do it this way, if you don't mind, because of course we have to talk about the players, we have to talk about the coaching, have to talk about the front office. So let's kind of go in that order and you take it anywhere you want to go. Let's talk about the players.
Well, first of all, let's start with the pitching first. Now, they went out and signed three starting pitchers out of free agency, and you know, they brought in some new relievers. And for a good while, you know, the starting pitching was good; it was solid. The bullpen was fantastic, but as the summer heat kind of wears down on people, you know, the starting pitching has really gotten beat up the last couple of months. The bullpen seems tired and it's more vulnerable. So they're giving up a lot more runs in, you know, July and August that they were giving up earlier. So that part's not working well. Then defensively, they're catching the ball well and all that stuff, but their catchers can't throw out anybody trying to steal, or hardly anybody trying to steal. There's been more bases stolen against the Cardinals this year than any team in baseball. They can't stop the running game. Then with the offense, you have a situation where you have two older players who, you know, Goldschmidt and Arenado, and they no longer really can deliver this huge impact. They're okay, but you don't get that huge burst of offense from them that you were counting on. And that's just, it's just part of getting old. And then you have, you know, the ongoing mystery of their young hitters who seem to be destined for stardom, and then they sort of run into trouble and they go into a slump and no one seems to know how to fix them and get them back on track. So you have, you know, basically four guys you're really counting on offensively this year: Goldschmidt, Arenado, Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman. When they're all having down seasons or seasons that just aren't making a difference, your offense is not going to be very good. And that's the state that they're in right now. So it's pretty much, listen, I'm happy to praise things, but right now, pretty much every function of the team is doing poorly. And that's why they are 12-18 in the last 30 games, which is the second worst record in the National League over the time. And that just tells us, look, it's just not a good team.
So I'm one of those guys. I played baseball. I understand the game, but I do not understand it to the level where I can criticize coaching or managing, or they shouldn't have made the switch there. They brought him in too early. They brought him in too late. You can talk to me about the coaching and the managing.
Well, I think Ali Marmol's done the best he could with what he has. And listen, I understand frustration from fans, and I'm not sitting here being an Ali Marmol apologist. But I also know what he's working with, and I just described some of the things that have gone wrong, and I don't think any of those things have gone wrong because of him. It reflects that the roster is not as strong as it needs to be, and a manager can only do so much with it. Yeah, Ollie makes mistakes. They all do. You know, second-guessing the manager has been part of baseball history since the first game was ever played, so that's part of the entertainment. But I find it hard to blame him because I think the problems are more deep-rooted. And I'm not saying he's a great manager, but it just seems like an easy fall guy when people want to start to blame someone for the Cardinals, you know, flame out here. So their roster is not good enough. You know, every area of the team that we just talked about, there's has sort of like given way to weakness and a lack of depth and all those things. So I think it's a combination of a roster that leaves a lot to be desired and players who should be better or pitchers who should be throwing better aren't doing it. So it's a shared responsibility. That's the way I see it.
And isn't it interesting? The players can only play to the level of their talent. The manager can only manage his roster. The GM can only get the guys who ownership is going to pay for it. It really does. Right. It's like the opposite of everything going downhill. Let's talk a little bit about front office and ownership.
Well, I think Bill DeWitt Jr. Is in a tough spot because the Cardinals were incredible for so long, and I don't think anybody should ever forget that. I know I don't. I appreciate very much all the winning that went on and on and on and on and on. But they got stagnant. You know, they got stale. They sort of fell behind the times, and the product started to erode. So the other part of that is that there's a lot more empty seats at Busch Stadium. Listen, the Cardinals are still very well supported, but the place isn't as full as it used to be. It's kind of surprising to see so many empty seats. So people are buying tickets, not necessarily using them. And Bill DeWitt told me one time, a couple times, there's nothing that bothers him more than seeing all the empty seats. So I got to believe that he's pretty upset by what he sees. And I'd find it hard to believe that he won't do something to change it going into next season, because if you bring back the same front office operation and you basically make cosmetic changes, people are going to say, well, hold on a minute. I gave up my tickets. But if you think that you're bringing back the same product and I'm going to go buy tickets again or get season tickets or go to more games, that's not happening. So listen, in all candor, I think there's got to be a shakeup in terms of the front office. And what that means exactly, that's up to Bill DeWitt Jr. to decide. But I know that even John Mozeliak has said he knows that the fans have been down on him for a long time, and we call it Mozeliak fatigue. So I don't think they can make any major moves unless they, in effect, start over with a revamped front office. That's just my opinion. I like Mo personally, worked with him a long time, but you got to separate the personal from the professional. I mean, that's my philosophy.
You know, Bern, it's. I think there's a good comparison in a lot of what we see in other forms of entertainment, right? I mean, Blockbuster Video used to be a powerhouse and a behemoth, and it didn't change with the times. Maybe it couldn't. Maybe it just wasn't possible. Maybe the times just changed. But I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. In I hear you describe it. I read your stuff on Scoops all the time, and it's more fundamental and core than it is who's writing out the lineups or which players you're drafting. It seems like it's philosophy. Like I watch other teams. I mean, you've said this a lot. Derek Gould says it a lot. A lot of people that are around the team note these things. The Cardinals payroll is plenty big. You know, everybody complains about they got to spend this or spend that. Milwaukee doesn't spend it, and yet they're finding a way to be good and competitive and beat you every single year. Tampa Bay doesn't spend it. You know, Minnesota's not a big money team. There are a lot of teams out there that are not spending big money, and it seems
Cleveland's
like
another one.
Yeah,
Cleveland Wheels,
absolutely another great one. And I think it's a lot about the most advanced parts of the game, right? Like I think the Cardinals are good at the old school stuff, but training hitters on very specific techniques they need to fix their weaknesses and enhance their strengths. Developing pitchers to fit the modern era as opposed to sticking with all the sinker slider college guys that they've been stuck with for the last 15 years, which worked for a while and just doesn't anymore.
No, the model has to be updated, and the model has to be the one they have, maybe more than updated. It kind of needs to be, you know, put aside the way you have an appliance or something, or you're a kid with toys. And at some point they go in the closet and you're like, well, I got to do something new. And they really have been way behind the curve in some of the new stuff. And that includes minor league staffing. It includes, you know, pitching labs, a lot of technological advances. I mean, they're just Bill DeWitt Jr., to his credit, was way ahead of the curve at one point. And that's why they had all that sustained success. He brought in Jeff Luhnow. People don't understand it, but it was a brilliant move, and it led to another run in incredibly successful baseball. But then Jeff Luhnow left to go to Houston, become the general manager. He took people with him. And the Cardinals really suffered from that loss of brain power. And Mo has done well. He did well for a while. He sustained what was there, but it has slowly, you know, faded away. Between 2011 and 2015, it's a five-year period. I mean, the Cardinals played in more postseason games than any team in the majors by far. They won the most postseason games in the majors, anyone by far. It's like 32 wins. So that's over 5 years. Another pennant, another World Series championship. They got the four straight NLCS. That's incredible success. Well, what's happened since 2016? That franchise that won 32 postseason games over 5 years since the start of 2016 has won 4 postseason games, and their record is 4-15. That right there tells you all you need to know about the decline in the Cardinals. And people can be in denial about this or whatever, but listen, man, that's why I do a lot of stats and numbers. Those things tell you the truth. Those things don't let you duck the responsibility of your performance. You know, so I just don't listen. I got to think that Bill DeWitt Jr.'s got enough pride, and he's probably angry, and he probably wants to make it better, and he wants to restore it. I got to believe that. I respect the heck out of this guy, but he's been a little too slow to recognize the growing problem, and now it's a huge problem because he's losing fans because of it. And when you're losing fans, you're losing people buying expensive beer at the ballpark and all the concessions. You're losing probably population of Ballpark Village. If you're developing an app that where they can go direct to consumer with their broadcast, as Bill DeWitt III wants to do, and I applaud him for that. But if your product's really lousy, you're not going to get as many people, you know, rushing in to sign up for that service. So here's the deal. I explain it this way. They have to make major changes, not for baseball reasons and also business reasons. It's on both fronts. There's no doubt about it.
If you're tuning in, you recognize the voice. That's great. Bernie Miklas from the Bernie Show podcast, which you can hear now on Odyssey.com. Scoops with Danny Mac. Bernie, let's say that they do make a change in the front office. Mr. DeWitt sees the light and he wants to make changes. When it comes to the roster, how much of a tear down and start over is this? And to what extent can we work with what we've got for next year?
Listen, I think they will have respectable talent coming back. Again, I'm not saying extraordinary talent, elite talent. I think they'll have enough respectable pieces to where, listen, it might be a really difficult transition year because whoever's going to be running things is going to be making changes. So they're not going to go bananas spending tons of money because it doesn't make sense to do it at that time. But I think they can avoid a total teardown. I really do. If they bring in the right person, and frankly, I think Chaim Bloom, who's been an advisor this year, and he's been studying every aspect of their operation. If he wants the job, I find it hard to believe he wouldn't get the job simply because he's already familiar with what needs to be done because he's been studying it and analyzing it since really last winter. So he'll be well-versed in what the Cardinals need to do. I think that they'll also have some young pitching on the way, and I think maybe if they have better coaching, better instruction, if they can fix hitters, some guys will naturally improve. Now, I'm not predicting a World Series parade. Believe me, I'm not. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be so drastic to where you sentence your franchise to like 2-3 seasons of losing 90, 100, 108 games or whatever.
Yeah, completely.
Do you agree, Wheels?
100%. Yeah, there's no reason for a teardown. You got enough players that are on good contracts, that are young, that you can work with and improve. I think you can do this and make moderate upgrades. I mean, again, look at Milwaukee as a great example. These past couple of off seasons, they don't go out and spend big money. They're not going out there and saying we have to make impact moves. From last year to this year, they lost Corbin Burns, who's a Cy Young contender. They lost Brandon Woodruff, who was their number two starter and also kind of a fringe Cy Young guy. Christian Yelich is hurt, and none of it matters because they do real well on the margins and they make internal options better. And I don't think there's any reason why you can't be that. And you're actually at a starting point that's at least where the Brewers were a year or two ago.
You know, if you're a Brewers fan, you have to be so pleased with that operation because I ran the numbers in a column a couple of months ago, and I'll have to revisit that. But if you look at the last, really since about 2018, 2019, if you look at how much the Cubs and the Cardinals have outspent the Brewers by payroll. It's a huge number. It's an immense number. It's like the have-nots and the haves. The Cubs have more money than any team in the division. The Cardinals have a lot of resources and revenue to play with. And Milwaukee is just like a typical model of smart dollar for the value purchases and moves and an efficient payroll. That's going to pay off because you recognize where the good talent is, and it's not necessarily the talent you got to pay through the nose for. Milwaukee continues to outperform these two juggernaut franchises that have so much more money to work with. And I think that's a great reflection on Milwaukee. And frankly, I think it's a poor reflection on the Cardinals and Cubs.
Finally, Bernie, don't you think the story is told for this year by Labor Day?
Dave, I don't see they've got the second worst record in the National League, also 27th overall since July 10th, which is when the hot streak ended. And if you look at what they were doing before they went on that 33-18 run and what they've done since then, I think their record is something like, 28-42 or 27-43, something like that. That kind of tells you where they are. Like, you take the beginning of the season and this part of the season, the combined record is awful. All they have is that one good run of baseball. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about at the very beginning with your very astute first question to kind of dissect everything. Every part of the team right now is not functioning well at all. And you got a really, really tough schedule that kicks in Friday. So how do you make all those things that are poor right now? How do you turn them into being above average or good against this killer schedule that they've got coming in? I mean, I'm just speaking pragmatically here. I don't see it.
Yeah. If you guys like what we do with Bernie here on the DGS, tune into the Bernie Show podcast on Odyssey.com. Bernie, thanks as always, my friend.
Anytime, man. Thank you. See you guys.
325 DGS, Dave Murray coming up next. Stairway to Kevin.
Sure. Let's see. What did I want to do? I had a thing picked out here, and if I wanted to do the serious one or if I want to do this. All right. So I'm going to throw this at the group because I mentioned this to Andrew, but I didn't tell him what it was. So there are superpowers in the food and drink game that are coming together to form a team. I wanted to throw it at you and see what you guys think of this. If you haven't heard of it already, if you have, that's fine. But Coke and Oreo are coming together. So they're going to do an Oreo-flavored Coke Zero and a Coke-flavored Oreo. How do we feel about the combos?
Man.
Yeah, I am not... I've said it before. I like things that taste like things. I don't like things that taste like other things.
I don't know. This one doesn't bother me that much.
No?
They're similar enough, right?
Like, yeah, chocolate it's like, oh, it makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, think about it. There's Coke, vanilla...
I'm more open to the Coke than I am the Oreo.
What are you guys talking about? They're not similar flavors at all.
Cola and chocolate are very similar, and you will see a combination of some form of vanilla with cola or with chocolate all the time. So they're not weird. It's not like what was the one that the Oreos that are doing like
kids.
Star Patch? Yeah, they're doing the Sour
Oreos
Patch Kids. That's weird.
Vanilla flavored.
The cream is not vanilla?
No, I don't think so.
What is it?
It's just like sugar. It's just like
cream.
Well, that goes with cola too.
It's not vanilla cream.
But that cream, that's the sugar goes with cola too.
Will you look this up, Rach? Are you looking it up?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see.
I'm saying they're complementary flavors. They are things that go together.
Yeah, it says, in addition to their traditional design of two chocolate wafers separated by a vanilla cream filling.
Yay!
Andrew's having a rough day.
It don't taste like vanilla. Whatever.
We broke him.
He's broken.
He just gave up.
It does not taste like vanilla.
You should go home and come back tomorrow.
I'm not buying either one of them, but they don't sound crazy to me.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not going to rush out and get one, but if someone like brought them into work, I'd be like, ooh, I'd try that.
Evidently,
Oreo Coke.
The cookies have a fizz.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too. A fizzing sensation.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely more into the drink than the cookie, though.
I had the Space Oreos, which tasted just like Oreos, except they had like a Pop Rocks kind of pop to them. Like
was that good?
Fizz in the back of the... It was pretty cool.
Nice.
It got annoying if you're like me and you ate like 9 of them at a time. By the time you got to your... By the time you got to your 9th one, you're like, all right, I can do without the
Pop Rocks.
I can do without the fizz.
I decided to go not controversial, and I hurt Andrew. I'm sorry, Andrew. But you think that's pretty
clever. I hope the Cardinals win the World Series. What about you guys?
Yes, my brother. I think the Cardinals need to win the World Series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not a... Yeah, you're not far off there as far as the vibe of the fan base. Yeah.
And the city. Yeah. We need a win.
Yeah.
Like, in your personal life, there are times where you're like, I need a win. Like, St. Louis needs a win.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd say that's for sure.
It was pretty unfortunate that we've had, like, a bad summer downtown and a bad Cardinals season.
Yes.
They're just, like, matching up. It's like, oh, this is not what we need as a city.
Yes, Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's just been a long time. We just need something.
Yep. Amen.
Not sure we're going to get it, but we need something.
Even if it was 2026, you know what I mean? Like, let's be realistic, like Bernie Miklas was being realistic. Even if it was season after next, we need to make the playoffs, if not this year, next year. We really need that.
Yeah, I think it's fair. You know, if you look at some of the best things that have happened in the last 10, 15 years, they've been Cardinals, the Blues winning the Stanley mm-hmm. Cup, City's yep. first year, last year being mm-hmm. so phenomenal. Like, we've had these little wins, or in some cases, big wins that have given you something. But
and let's face it, it keeps us in the mind of people who don't live in St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Another kind of weird weather day, Dave.
Yeah, you know, there's not much out there as far as rain is concerned. There's a little light rain, a little drizzle. There might be a rumble of thunder over the next couple of hours, but there's not a heck of a lot. Temperatures mainly in the 70s for any evening plans and only 72 for the low, so we're not moving much. Tomorrow, there is a cool front on the way, but it takes all day. In fact, it takes about 24 hours to get here. So Thursday, still looking like pure summer, partly sunny, hot, and humid. 92 for the high on Thursday. Then late day Thursday, I'm looking for some developing thunderstorms into Thursday evening. Some of these could be strong to severe, and the window of opportunity, it's not going to last this long, but the window of opportunity is 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon to 9 p.m. Thursday evening. That's when we have to kind of be on alert. The front's still hanging around on Friday, so I've got to keep some chances of scattered thunderstorms. Still quite warm, 90 degrees. But the northwest flow takes over Friday night, partly cloudy, dropping humidity. Temperatures don't drop a heck of a lot Friday night, 70, but the weekend looks good. I want to preface that it's not like last weekend, which was a spectacular weekend. But we're still in August, Saturday and Sunday, sunny skies, low humidity, and 86 for high temperatures Saturday and again on Sunday.
Yeah, we can take that.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone who watched the Olympics, or even if you didn't and you're on social media, you know who Ray Gunn is. Mm-hmm. And she is the breaker from Australia. Evidently, they don't do a lot of breaking in Australia because she was the best that they had. And she wasn't very good. And she's taking a lot of crap and a lot of people laughing at her. And a lot of support on the internet saying, leave her alone. She's a sweet person who's doing her best. Well, now there's a new development.
Well, so there's a petition on change.org and it's being reported. Reported on a little bit down under. The allegations from, I think it sounds like this is coming from other people in Australia mm-hmm. that are in the breakdancing competition community. Mm-hmm. They are saying that she manipulated the qualifier by setting up her own governing body, that she refused grants to underprivileged performers that were from another part of the country that couldn't make it over. Apparently they have funds to do that. And they're saying she refused it. Now, that we none of this is confirmed. This is just part of what they're saying, and that allows her husband to be the coach of the national team, who also has a vote in choosing who gets to compete and who gets to go. And now there's a petition that has 35,000 signatures asking Australia to investigate.
Doesn't sound great.
No.
No. If any of that's true, if there's any truth at all that she's a part of setting up the qualifiers,
even if her husband
like that,
is the head coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sus. That's not okay.
He didn't teach her good.
And again, these are allegations. They are not. Well, obviously, he's not much of a coach either.
Right?
The kangaroo.
Right.
I still love how people are like, "Don't make fun of her. You're witnessing someone trying their best. Like, come on, give me a break." If there was ever a situation that begged to be made fun of, it was Ray Gunn breaking at the Summer Olympics.
Sounds like Razor is kind of jealous of Ray Gunn.
I'm not jealous of Ray Gunn. Let's not start that rumor.
Yeah, I'm with Razor on this one.
I think it's funny that out of everything in the world, this is the topic everyone's getting involved in.
Yeah. The world is blowing up. Yeah.
There's a website that I will sometimes...
War in the Middle East.
There's a website that I will sometimes buy like old video, like vintage video games from, and they sent an email to everyone today that said, like, I'm not here to talk about her performance or her backstory or the drama around her being picked. I just don't think it's okay to ever cyberbully anyone. Here at Website, we believe everyone deserves respect, whether it's in gaming or in life. So, and it's like, why are you sending me this.
Why is she even affiliated with what they're doing in any way? Like, why why did they feel the need to speak up on this of all things?
Right. They never, like, why am I getting an email from a video game resale website? It's now, like, just so you know, don't be mean to Raygun. Raygun's trying her hardest.
I'm ready to start a new rumor. I think Raygun has hired some bots online to defend her.
Oh.
Because why else would everyone be so suddenly invested in protecting her?
Oh, how ugly is the green-eyed monster.
Now, let's compare these two. These are not the same thing, but obviously people are mad that they think she's being cyber-bullied, right? And now you have Elon Musk, J.K. Rowling, and a few others being named in a legal proceeding in France for cyberbullying Iman Khalif, who won the gold medal in women's boxing. And that you guys remember the big controversy that we talked about. People are saying, that's a man fighting a woman, which it's not. You know, Iman Khalif is a woman. And we don't know for sure what test she failed in the in a different boxing organization. She has passed every Olympic test that was put forth, and everybody who knows her, all of her coaches from Miami, like, these are people, they're like, she's a she, it's not a man. And she won the gold medal. By the way, her winning the gold medal kept China from winning one more gold medal, which meant that we get to tie for the gold medal count in the U.S. I thought people would be interested in that, but that's being pursued as a cyber bullying thing by France, and their legal authorities are looking into these, into what basically is a complaint filed by her and her team. I think there's a large difference between these two cases.
Yeah.
And I think there are people that cannot draw those distinctions. Like, they will lump them together and say, see, these are both the same thing, but they are not the same thing.
Raygun is a 36-year-old professional breakdancer. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah, great point. And I didn't see anything like troubling about the Raygun hate.
It was more
like,
performance-based.
It's like, you are bad at breakdancing. That's not bullying someone. That's pointing out the obvious.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people made jokes about it, but it wasn't like, it wasn't getting dark. I never saw like a tweet where I was like, wow, this is inappropriate. With the boxer, whenever people are like, this dude just beat up a woman, that's a completely different scenario.
That's going to get people hurt.
If you were making fun of, let's say she was a terrible boxer and got knocked out on two punches, making fun of that, it's fine. That's a performance. But when you're talking about someone's biology and making accusations that are just not founded in reality, that's how you get yourself in trouble.
You know, this is probably just too close to home for me. I once entered a moonwalk contest at the Adams Mark.
Oh, there's a sight I can't get out of my head.
I think you broke Wheeler.
That's what the judges said.
Don't take the drink of Gatorade during a segment. We laugh too much here.
But it's true.
Spit that all over my computer.
The classic meme has always been like, we should get one regular person a year in the Olympics and just see what happens.
And we did.
It lived up to every possible expectation.
It's all we're talking about.
It was so good that they stopped doing breakdancing forever at the Olympics.
Just don't do it in anything dangerous, right? Like, let's not let a normie throw the javelin or anything like that.
That
but yeah, let them run the 400 and see how far behind they finished. I'll be the guinea pig.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Alrighty.
351 DGS. We have Matt Pauling joining us at the top of the hour. A lot of Cardinals talk today, but a lot to talk about with the Cardinals. Headlines?
Brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. I love this story. There was an armed robbery at a Minnesota liquor store that was thwarted by an 8-year-old girl with a baseball bat.
Damn.
Surveillance video shows the suspect enter the store, pull out a handgun, and demand all of the money in the register. When he moved behind the counter, the manager suddenly punched him and wrestled him to the ground. His 8-year-old daughter then grabbed a bat and hit the suspect multiple times before he finally ran away.
Jeez.
Turns out his weapon was a realistic-looking BB gun, so they weren't in any huge danger the whole time. The manager says he didn't even realize his daughter had helped out until he saw the video later.
Man. Gosh.
That's
how do you think you guys would react?
A brave little kid.
If you were witnessing a holdup.
I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, because you think, like, oh, I'd be a hero, but then unless you're in that position, you really don't know.
Which it are you in depends. This scenario? Like, are you the one with the gun pointed at you, or are they wrestling on the ground?
No, you're more like a bystander.
Yeah, and I would love to think that I would intervene somehow.
A lot of it kind of depends on where you are, too. I mean, if you're, like, right next to the guy, maybe you reflexively, like, throw an elbow at his head or whatever. But if you're, like, across the store, there's really not a lot you can do.
Yeah.
A newspaper reporter was caught using AI to generate fake quotes and stories.
No.
Sounds like they shouldn't be working for a newspaper. Nope. This happened in Wyoming. They were caught using a generative AI when a rival paper noticed some odd wording in an article about comedian Larry the Cable Guy serving as grand marshal of a local parade. I promise you this story is true.
I was going to say, maybe just that there's an article on Larry the Cable Guy.
He also had created fake quotes attributed to the governor of Wyoming and other state and local officials.
Oh, wow.
The editor of the paper says that the person who did this is new to journalism and admitted to using AI and has resigned.
Can I tell you
one
of my worst being caught at something things?
Sure.
When we built our house and the guy who had helped us do it, he was working for the company, was not Lombardo. It's before Lombardo was here, but he was like our guy. And we were literally, he and I, driving to the closing to get the keys and all that kind of stuff. And he knew who I was and knew that I was a comedian. And he goes, what do you think of Larry the Cable Guy? And I go, oh, my God, the lowest form of comedy. Just it's embarrassing that he's even as famous as he is. And he goes, oh, my brother's his head writer.
Oh, no.
And I swear. And I was like, well, it's mostly in the delivery.
Yeah. It's, you know, I have a problem with him.
The
not
jokes
with
are
the
good.
Content. Yeah.
Yeah. The jokes are stellar.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the word placement, it's perfect.
It's like, why did I feel the need to go so far out of that? Like, if I had really thought of it, why was he even asking me?
Yeah.
He clearly has some connection.
One more story here. An Illinois woman won $1 million from a gifted scratch-off ticket. Her husband spent $25 on one of those crossword scratch-offs. And $25 diamond crossword, and she won $1 million. The lucky winner says she and her husband are going to use the money to purchase a new house.
Hmm.
Be a nice house.
Good for Betty.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
You're jealous of her like I am of Ray then.
Well, I don't think anyone's that jealous. Ray gun. I just think she's kind of cute.
I mean,
she's a pretty girl, but that doesn't mean she's a good breaker.
Yeah.
Can you break like that?
Absolutely not, and I will not be trying.
I will. No, I won't. I can do the kangaroo.
What's the thing with her hand?
Oh, she has this one move, and it's not really a move, where she just, like, kneeled down on the ground, and I guess she was doing, like a DJ spin thing,
oh,
but she just,
okay.
like, rubbed her hand on the ground for a little bit.
It's terrible.
I was like, that's interesting.
Adorable.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything, and that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!